one day, the ink was just to be finished. So the master said, go out and find more ink. And the disciple went out. The master forgot him. His presence became effortless. His presence was the problem. Constantly in the mind, the idea that he is judging here, whether he is going to like it or not, whether he will discard again, this created an inner anxiety, and the master could not be spontaneous. The disciple was out. The design was complete. And the disciple came in and he said, wonderful, but why couldn't you do it before? The master says, now I understand why. Because you were here. Because of you, I was making an effort to get your approval. The effort destroyed the whole thing. I couldn't be missed. I couldn't flow. I couldn't forget myself because of you. Whenever you are doing meditation, the very effort that you are doing it, the very idea to succeed in it, is the barrier. Be conscious of it. Go on doing it, be conscious of it. A day will come. Just through patience, a day comes when effort is not there. Really, you are not there, only meditation is. It takes a long time. It cannot be predicted. No one can say when it will happen. Because if something is to be achieved by effort, it can be predicted that if you do this much effort, you will succeed. But meditation is going to succeed only when you become effortless. That's why nothing can be predicted. When you will succeed, nothing can be said. You may succeed this very moment, and you may not succeed for life. The whole thing hinges on one thing. When your effort drops and you become spontaneous, when your meditation is not an act but becomes your being, when your meditation is just like love, you cannot do anything about love. Or can you? If you do anything, you falsify it. It will become artificial. It will not go deep. You will not be in it. It will become an acting. Love is. You cannot do anything about it. You cannot do anything about meditation also. But I don't mean that don't do anything. Because then you will remain whatsoever you are. You have to do something perfectly conscious that only by doing you will not achieve. Doing will be needed in the beginning. You cannot leave it. One has to go through it. But one has to go through it. One has to transcend. And the effortless floating has to be achieved. The path is arduous and very contradictory. You cannot find anything more contradictory than meditation. Contradictory because it has to be started as an effort, and it has to end as effortless. But it happens. You may not be able to conceive logically how it happens, but in experience it happens. A day comes when just you get fed up with your effort. It falls. It happened to Buddha this way. For 6 years he was making every effort possible. No human being has been so much obsessed to get enlightenment. He did everything that he could do. He moved from one teacher to another, and whatsoever he was taught, he did it perfectly. That was the problem, because no teacher could say to him, you are not doing well, that's why you are not achieving. And that was impossible. He was doing better than any master. So the masters had to confess. They said, this much we had to teach. Beyond this we don't know. So you go somewhere else. He was a dangerous disciple. And only dangerous disciples achieve. He staked everything that was possible. Whatsoever he was told, he will do it absolutely as it was told. And then he will come to the master and say, I have done it. But nothing has happened. So what next? The teachers will say, you go somewhere else. There is one teacher in the Himalayas, go there. Ah, there is one teacher in some forest, go there. We don't know more than this. He went around and around for 6 years. He did all that is humanly possible. And then he got fed up. The whole thing appeared futile, fruitless, meaningless. One night, he relaxed all effort. He was sitting under the Bodhi tree. And he said, now, everything is finished. In the world, there is nothing. And in this spiritual search also, there is nothing. Now there is nothing to do for me. Everything is finished. Not only this world, but the other world also. Suddenly, all effort dropped. He was empty. Because when there is nothing to do, the mind cannot move. The mind moves only because there is something to do, some motivation, some goal. The mind moves because something is possible, something can be achieved, the future. Not today, then tomorrow. But the possibility is there. I can achieve it. The mind moves. That night, Buddha came to a dead point. Really, he died that very moment, because there is no future, nothing is to be achieved. And nothing can be achieved. I have done everything. The whole world is futile. And this whole existence is a nightmare. Not only the material world became futile, but the spiritual also. He relaxed. Not that he did. This is the point to understand. There was nothing to be tense. Therefore he relaxed. There was no effort on his part to relax under the Bodhi tree. He was not trying relaxation. There was nothing to do, nothing to be tense, nothing to desire, no future, no hope. He was absolutely hopeless that night. Relax. Relaxation happened. You cannot relax. because something or other is still there to be achieved. That goes on stirring your mind. You go on spinning and spinning around and around. Suddenly the spinning stops. The wheel stops. Buddha relaxed and fell asleep. In the morning when he awoke, the last star was set. He looked at the last star disappear. And with that last star disappearing, he disappeared completely. He became an enlightened one. Then people started asking, how you achieved this? How? What was the method? Now you can understand Buddha's difficulty. If he says, I have achieved through some method, then he is wrong, because he achieved only when there was no method. If he says, I achieved through effort, then he is wrong, because he achieved only when there was no effort. But if he says that don't do any effort and you will achieve, then too he is wrong. Because in his no effort, those 6 years effort was the background. Without that effort, that 6 years arduous effort, this state of no effort could not have been achieved. Only because of that mad effort, he came to a peak, and there was no further goal. Relaxed and fell down in the valley. This has to be remembered for many reasons. Spiritual effort is the most contradictory phenomenon. Effort has to be made with full consciousness that nothing can be achieved through effort. Effort has to be made only to achieve no effort, only to achieve effortlessness. But don't relax your effort, because if you relax, you will never achieve that relaxation which came to Buddha. You go on doing every effort. So automatically, a moment comes when just by a sheer effort, you reach to a point where relaxation happens to you. For example, you may take it in a different way. As I see, in the West, ego has been the central point, the fulfillment of the ego, development of the ego, to achieve a strong ego, helper. In the East, how to achieve egolessness, how to be a non-ego, how to forget, surrender, dissolve yourself completely, so that you are not. The East has been trying towards egolessness. The West has been trying towards the perfect ego. But this is the contradictoriness of things. If you don't have a very developed ego, you cannot surrender. You can surrender only if you have a perfectly clear-cut ego. Otherwise, you cannot surrender. Because who will surrender? So to me, both are half. And both are in misery, East and West, both. Because East has taken the egolessness, which is the end part, and the beginning part is missing. Who will surrender the ego? The peak is not there, so who who will create the valley? The valley is created only around a peak. The greater the peak, the deeper the valley. If you don't have an ego, or a very lukewarm one, surrender is not possible. Or your surrender will be a lukewarm surrender. So nothing will happen out of it. There will be no explosion. In the West, the beginning part has been emphasized. So you can go on growing with your ego. It will create more and more anxiety. And when really you have created it, you don't know what to do with it. Because the end part is not there. To me, the spiritual search is both. Create a very great peak. Create a perfect ego just to dissolve it. That seems absurd. Just to dissolve it. Just to achieve a deep surrender. Just to lose it from there. And you cannot lose something which you don't have. In my view, humanity has to be trained for these two things together. Help everyone to create a perfect ego, a fulfilled ego. But this is only half the journey. And then help him to surrender. Greater the peace, the deeper will be the value. Higher the ego, the deeper you will move in your surrender. And this is for everything. On the spiritual path, remember this continuous contradictoriness. Don't forget it even for. Become perfect egoist so that you can surrender. So that you can dissolve, melt. Do every effort that you can do just to reach a point where effort leaves you and you are totally effortless. Third question, just whatever I was saying, it is related to it. You said last night that the more the mind grows, the more we know that the nature of the mind is confusion. But isn't it true that this growth of the mind also leads to clarity? Yes, it leads to clarity. Because only when you have a very mature mind, you become aware that you are confused. Even to become aware that mind is confusion, a very developed mind is needed. Those who are not aware that their mind is confusion are really not mature minds. They are childish, juvenile, still developing. Only a very mature mind can become aware of the quality of the mind, that it is confusing. And when you have developed a mind, only then meditation is possible. Because meditation is the opposite pole. Meditation means no mind. But how can you achieve no mind if you have not achieved the mind? To achieve a mind, just to lose it. And don't think that if ultimately one has to reach the state of no mind, what is the use of achieving a mind? Because if you don't achieve a mind, the ultimate is not going to happen to you. It can happen only if the mind is there. So I am not against mind. I am not against intellect. Really, I am not against anything. I am for everything. Everything can be used to reach the opposite goal. There is a polarity. And the opposite goal cannot be reached if the polarity is not there. A madman cannot meditate. Why? Because he has no mind. But this no mind is not the no mind of Buddha. No mind can have two dimensions, below mind, above mind. The above mind is also no mind, and below mind is also no mind. You can fall down from the mind. It's not there, but it is not meditation. You have to go beyond mind, only then. The Buddha's no mind is achieved. And always remember, because they are so similar, you can misunderstand the whole thing. So similar. For example, a child is innocent. A saint is also innocent. A Jesus or a Krishna. But their innocence is not childish. It is childlike, not childish. Because the child is innocent only because he is ignorant. He is innocent only as a negative thing. Just the absence. Sooner or later, everything will erupt. He is a volcano waiting to erupt. The innocence is just the silence before a volcano erupts. A saint, one is one who has gone beyond. The eruption has happened. The volcano is silent again. But this silence is different. The first silence was very pregnant. Something was present there. The silence was just on the surface. Deep down, that child was getting ready to be disturbed. The sin has arisen. The cycle has gone. This silence, this innocence, appears similar, but there is a deep difference. So sometimes an idiot can also appear to be saint-like. And idiots are saint-like. They are not cunning. To be cunning, intelligence is needed. They are not calculating. To be calculating, mind is needed. Idiots are simple, innocent, non-cunning, non-calculating. They cannot deceive anyone. That they would not lie. They cannot. The very capacity is not there. They look like saints. And sometimes saints look like idiots, because the same thing has happened again, in a different, altogether different dimension. You can fall down below the mind, then to a no mind happens, but it is not meditation. you have simply lost even that mind which was going to become a step towards meditation. So I am not against mind, develop intellect. But remember well, this is just a means, and a means which has to be forsaken, thrown away. It has to be used like a boat. If you reach to the other shore, you leave the boat. You forget about the boat completely. Fourth question, we very often feel that we create our own suffering. In spite of this, why do we continue creating them? And when and how does one stop creating his own suffering? The first thing, and very basic to be understood, whenever we say that we very often feel that we create our own suffering, this is not the case. You never feel really that you are the creator of your own suffering. You may think so because you have been taught so. Because teachers for centuries and centuries have been teaching that you are the creator of your own suffering. No one else is responsible. You have heard these things. You have read that these things. They have become your blood and bone. They have become your unconscious conditioning. So sometimes you trust that we create our own suffering. But this is not your feeling. This is not your realization. Because if you realize it, then the other thing is impossible. Then you cannot say, in spite of this, why do we continue creating them? If you feel really, and it is your own feeling, that you are the creator of your own suffering, any moment you can stop. Unless you want to create them. Unless you enjoy them, unless you are a masochist, then everything is okay, then there is no question. If you say, I enjoy my suffering, then it is okay. You can go on creating it. But you say, I suffer, and I want to go beyond it. I want to stop it completely, and I understand that I am the creator. Then you are wrong. You don't understand it. Socrates is reported to have said that knowledge is virtue. And there has been a long discussion for these 2,000 years that whether Socrates is right or wrong. Knowledge is virtue. Socrates says, once you know something, you cannot do contrary to it. If you know that anger is suffering, you cannot be angry. This is what Socrates means. Knowledge is virtue. You cannot say, I know anger, it's still I do move in it. What to do about it now? Socrates says the first thing is wrong. You don't know that anger is bad. That's why you go on moving in it. If you know, you cannot move in it. How can you move against your own knowledge? I know that if I put my hand in the fire, it is going to be painful. If I know, I cannot put my hand. But if somebody else has told me, I have heard through the tradition, I have read in the scriptures that fire burns, and I have not known fire, and I have not known any similar experience, only then I can put my hand into fire, and that too only once. Can you conceive it, that you have put your hand into fire and you are burned and you suffered, and again you go and ask that I know that fire burns, but in spite of it, I go on putting my hand into the fire. What to do about it? Who will believe that you know? And what type of knowledge is this? If your own experience of suffering and burning cannot stop you, nothing is going to stop you. Now there is no possibility, because the last possibility has been missed. But no one can miss it. That is impossible. And Socrates is right. And all those who have known, they will agree with Socrates. The agreement has a very deep point in it. Once you know, but remember, the knowledge must be yours. A borrowed knowledge won't do. Borrowed knowledge is useless. Unless it is your own experience, it is not going to change you. Others' experience are of no help. You have heard that you are the creator of your own suffering. But this is just in the mind. It has not entered your being. It is not your own knowledge. So, when you are discussing, you can discuss about cerebral. But when the actual phenomena happens, you will forget. And you will behave in the way you know, not in the way others know. When you are at ease, cool, collected, silently discussing about anger, you can say it is poison. It is a disease. Evil. But when someone makes you angry, then a complete change occurs. Now it is not intellectual discussion. Now you are involved. And the moment you are involved, you become angry. Later on again, retrospectively, when you will get again cool, the memory will come back. Your mind will again start functioning. And you will say, that was wrong. It was not good of me to do that. I know anger is wrong. Who is this I? Just the intellect. You don't know. Because when someone pushes you into anger, you throw this mind away. It is useful as far as you can discuss. But when a real situation arises, only the real knowledge will help. When there is no situation, you can go on. Even in a discussion, the real situation can arise. The other can go on contradicting you so much that you become angry. And then you will forget. A real knowledge means that which has happened to you. You have not heard about, not read about, you have not collected information about it. It is your own experience. And then there is no question. Because after that, you cannot against it. Not that you will have to make an effort not to go against it. Simply, you cannot go against it. How can I, when I know this is a wall, and I want to get out of this room, how can I try to pass through the wall? I know this is a wall. So I will search for the door. Only a blind man can try to get out through the wall. I have got eyes. I see what is the wall and what is the door. And if I try to enter the wall and tell you that I know very well where is the door, and I know this too, that this is the wall, but in spite of this, how to stop myself not to try to enter the wall? That means, as far as I am concerned, that door looks to me false. Others have told me that is the door, but as far as I am concerned, I know that door is false. And others have told that this is a wall, but as far as I see the door here, in this wall. And that's why I try. In this situation, you have to make a clear-cut distinction, what you know and what you have gathered as knowledge. Don't rely on information. From the greatest source, even if you collect from the greatest source, information is information. Even a Buddha says to you, it is not your own. And it is not going to help you in any way. But you can remain thinking that it is your knowledge. And this misunderstanding will waste your energy, time and life. So the basic thing is not to ask what to do so that suffering is not created. The basic thing is to know that you are the creator of your suffering. So whenever next time a real situation arises and you are in suffering, remember to find out whether you are the cause of it. And if you can find out that you are the cause of it, the suffering will disappear. And the same suffering will not appear again. Impossible. Don't deceive yourself. You can, that's why I say, when you are suffering, you can say, yes, I know, I have created this suffering. But deep down you know someone else has created it. Your wife has created, your husband has created, someone else has created. And this is simply a consolation because you cannot do anything. You console yourself that no one has created, I have created it myself. And by, I will stop it. But knowledge is instant transformation. There is no by and by. If you understand it, you have created it, it will drop immediately. And it is not going to come up again. If it comes again, it means the understanding has not run deep. So there is no need to find out what to do and how to stop. The need is to go deep and to find really who is the cause of it. If others are cause, then it cannot be stopped because you cannot change the whole world. If you are the cause only, then it can be stopped. That's why I insist only religion can lead humanity towards non-suffering. Nothing else can lead. Because everyone else believes that the suffering is caused by others. Only religion says that suffering is caused by yourself. So religion makes you the master of your destiny. You are the cause of your suffering, hence you can be the cause of your bliss. Enough for today?